Hey everyone, welcome. I'm G. This is Elemental Awakening. Today I have a very special guest who is also in the film Psyched Out. His name is Ben Stewart. He is a filmmaker, a musician. He focuses on conscious and awakening arts. He's made some awesome documentaries that really helped me wake up in a huge way, which we're going to talk a bit about. And he's an independent journalist in some ways, or investigator of sorts. And today's podcast is going to be super interesting, maybe controversial to some. He brings up some very interesting topics that he's talked about in his newest film, Esoteric Agenda 2020, or Esoteric Agenda 2. So, Ben, welcome to the podcast.
Yo, Gio, so good to be on the program. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I've also been on Ben's podcast once before, too. Is that still going, or you're not doing the podcast anymore? Mm-hmm.
You know what? That was living on SoundCloud for a little bit, and I need to retrieve that. We just got to do it over again because the audio quality could have been better on that one, and we probably both got a lot more stories to tell now.
Yeah. I had a few people reach out to me because they heard me on there, so thank you for that. And just before we get started, thank you for everything that you're doing. Like, all the work you've done on all the things that I've seen, I know has, like, helped to wake up so many people in different ways, whether it's waking them up with a sense of hope, waking them up, seeing like a lot of fear, which sometimes also can catalyze into a different way of thinking. But more than anything, it's just this very real way of presenting like, hey, like this is a possibility, like look at this and see. So thank you for that. Tell me a bit about your story of how you came to do this kind of work. You know, like who is Ben and what inspired you to start creating documentaries? And you're also now doing some psychedelic sort of genre stuff with Gaia. So tell me the whole story, how you started and how you got to where you are now.
Thanks, man. My story, I was an army brat, so I traveled all around the world nonstop, was moving just about every year, if not every 6 months, and in and out of the country. I lived in Hawaii and I lived in Kwajalein, which is in the Marshall Islands among the Marshallese, which is a shamanic culture out there. And so I got to see a lot of the world. I got to see the third world side of the Marshall Islands, incredible the way that I was able to see different cultures and different ways of living. And then eventually I landed in Pennsylvania, and that's where I got into music. I was always into sports, broke my ankle on the growth plate one time and never returned to sports per se, but I instantly got into music and started playing, performing, writing, composing on the computer. And that really brought out an artistic side of me that I've never been able to part ways with. Then right as I was about to graduate high school, I thought, am I really gonna try and make it in music? And I had this freak out moment, and I decided in that contracted state, I was gonna go enlist into the military. So I enlisted with the U.S. Air Force, 6-year enlistment term, went to basic training, absolutely hated it. I hated the first 4 years of being in the military. And then eventually the camaraderie really was what I began realizing, like, I love these people though. You know, there's a family feel. I got to travel the world again. But in that time, while I was in the military, I got into a band called Hyrosonic. This was our latest album. That's The Hanged Man. He's meant to be upside down. And I got into that band in 2002. No, it was 2003. We were on Lollapalooza. And so we got to play with A Perfect Circle. I got to meet Maynard, James Keenan. We played with Audioslave. So I got to meet Chris Cornell and Rage Against the Machine. 30 Seconds to Mars, Jane's Addiction, Jurassic 5, Incubus. Just incredible.
Wow, those are some of, that's me growing up. Like, those are like my favorites, man.
Same here. And you know what's great about all those is they had a very serious message. They were speaking about worldly things, and they were very mind-bending and, shall you say, newer, more modern psychedelic style music. Tool, for sure. I never got to perform with them, but basically I was really into that kind of genre, prog rock, to bend the mind, to make you understand the pattern, but you don't know how to pinpoint it. And it's like Tool. They really just kind of break you out of the patterned way that you typically listen to music. So I'd always been into psychedelics since age 14. And then I finally, as I got out of the military, I had this moment where I realized I wasn't allowed to speak about world topics. I wasn't allowed to have a public, political, or any kind of opinion other than towing the military party line. Because if you're in the military, even if you're not in uniform, you represent the military. So as soon as I got out, I had had people saying, like, what are your lyrics about? What are you about? And I didn't want to just write back in an email like, well, I'm this and I do these things. I figured I'd like, let me show you. I'm just going to make a piece of art and show you. I thought it was going to be a 15-minute film on the band. It turned into a two-hour documentary called Esoteric Agenda. And that was back in 2008. It was January of 2008. I started releasing that. And then all of a sudden people started hitting me up. I sent it to 15 people. I thought there was going to be 15 views. That was my logic. Never realized the sharing concept and how exponential viral growth could happen. And I think it was like 200,000 views later, I was getting a ton of people contacting me, all different walks of life. And they were saying like, well, can you do another film that's more like the ending of Esoteric Agenda? Because the ending of Esoteric Agenda was, at the whole beginning, I was showing you how we could be lied to in every single corner of society, every single corner of, you know, from the distortion of time and the dates that certain events happen on, like major global events, attacks, wars started, ended, all in very specific time frames, all the way down to the advancing of technology and the recreating of a false god. So omnipotence, omnipresence, all that kind of stuff. And that's technology, which is interesting because that's what my latest film, Esoteric Agenda 2, is all about. But before I got there, I decided, okay, you know what? I'm going to focus on Chymatica, which really delves into what is the ego? You know, we know that, oh, I have a personality. It's distinct. My body, my words, my behavior, it's distinct from you, Geo. Well, that's my ego. But going into, well, what is that? And what happens? Can you be something other than that? You know, or can you step outside of the ego? And I had this experience right after making Esoteric Agenda where I did ayahuasca for the first time. Now, mind you, I had done psychedelics before, but I'd never done it in a ceremonial sacred setting. So I'd never had this kind of awakening. I'd never had this depth of space being held by a shaman who's been there and deeper and knows you survive. This is all beautiful. You might think this is terrible, but this is the beautiful process. And that was a turning point for me. And I realized that in this next film, Chymatica, and I filmed one of my ayahuasca ceremonies, and that's in Chymatica. It was a very quick moment where you see me drinking a strange brew. That was it. And that was a defining moment in my life that night. And so, I died several times, several ways.
Someone recently said this, that like doing high dose psychedelics is practicing dying. And every time you go through that death experience, you come back like a little more wiser, a little more conscious, a little more like aware. And I was like, wow, like that's I've never seen it put that way. Just you're practicing dying. Anyway, sorry, so keep going. Sorry to interject there.
Death ain't what it used to be. You know what I mean? When you die, you realize death isn't what you thought it was. And really, so the process of making Chymatica was very heavily influenced by that moment, that medicine experience. And what that allowed me to do in the film was really show that there's a lot of darkness in the world. There's a lot of darkness. There's a lot of devious things happening. There's a lot of deception. And guess what? You are not separate from any of it. There's a lot of solutions available. There's massive solutions. There's tons of money. There's many, many resources. And guess what? You are not separate from any of it. There's this entire universe, and it is a living, thinking, conscious organism that even breathes. It expands and contracts. And it is aware of you. It is aware of me. And guess what? None of us are separate or lesser than or more than it. we are all just an aspect of it, trying to figure out our role, our aspect of it. So I was able to put that into a film, this concept of like mass psychology is really, it's a dream that we haven't yet woke up from. Yeah, it's an illusion, or it's a game that we're playing that we haven't yet put down. Same with economics, same with all those other things. So I tried to put that in the film to be like, guess what? You are the solution and you are also the problem. And neither of those is a good or a bad statement. It's simply the fabric of reality. And the fabric of reality holds these polar opposites that may seem paradoxical to your thinking, but your thinking is the problem. The fact that you have to try and think your way through this is actually the biggest impediment to our healing as a species. It's trying to think our way through something that the heart needs to experience, that the rest of the body needs to immerse itself and surrender to. And the brain, it doesn't like concepts that it has to surrender to. The ego doesn't like to have to surrender control. So it is the ego and the mind that you are contending with on ayahuasca and these death experiences. And in a sense, that's really all that's really dying. And this beautiful body that eventually dies, you know, all of us are eventually going to die. And what does that mean? That means that this form served its purpose, right? And a new form needs to come on. And we are not allowed to know what's on the other side of that event horizon, just like before you ever do plant medicine, you just don't know until you know. And then when you know, you realize, holy shit, everybody needs to know this. You know, so that's my whole impetus for making films. I went on to make other films like Ungrip.
Tell me about the inspiration between behind Ungrip, because, you know, that one also sort of resonated with me in a way that at one point I was like, okay, this world is just like messed up. And the safest thing to do is to totally off-grid myself, like just go off-grid and, you know, create a community that's independent, self-sustainable. But there's a lot of challenges with that once you're used to living with certain amenities. And so I saw it as a potential, but I was just like seeing, I think it was Rob and the Page family. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like some of the challenges you have. And I was like, geez, man, like it makes you think, like, if is that the alternative to this? And like, that's fucking challenging. And then they're like, okay, listen, we'll give you a lot of these comforts, but there's a price you got to pay for that. You know, like being plugged into the system. So yeah, tell me a bit about your, because I guess my solution was like, okay, if you can live off grid and provide shelter, water, food, or a good percentage of your own food, then no matter what really happens in the outside world, you can stay the course, right? You can sort of be okay. When if you lose your power, you lose your water supply, you lose that, then like, okay, chaos can happen really quickly, right? So that's what sort of felt comforting to me, like wanting to design like communities that are modern that sort of can be off-grid like that. But again, like that's just a huge undertaking. I think there's some people around the world doing it. But anyways, I'm sidetracking. Tell me about your inspiration on Ungrip, because I loved it.
Yeah, so Ungrip, that came out differently than the other films. The other films were, I need to make a film, you know? This one was, I met Rob at my very first talk ever, which was in Toronto. So that was my first talk and that was his first talk. And obviously we got to talking. We had many conversations before, but once I met him, you know, I was just thinking like, I need to come visit your property. And I have a feeling I need to record it. And I feel like I need to tell this story because you seem to be an example living what it is that I talked about in the first few films, mm-hmm. which is, you know, I get into admiralty law, and what is law other than an interface? It's a thing that we have to connect through to our government, you know, to get all these documents to allow us to travel, to allow us to do this and that. And it just breaks down the ideas of what do you mean allow us? Like I'm a human, and where does this authority come from saying that I need to follow this process to do that? And a lot of people know the face of that answer, which is just, well, we the people decided we need government. And so the government is really decided by us, it's influenced by us, it's for us, and it's just a mechanism there to make our dreams come true. And I didn't realize what I was doing when I made the film, but it was slightly lonely to see what Rob had built. And it's so beautiful. It's so connected to nature and devoid of anyone else other than his family. It's got the animals, it's got everything you need. And yes, he has people coming through. He teaches martial arts in the community. It's not much different than somebody just living on acreage, right? But it had this lonely vibe to it. And I got many people coming to me saying that this changed my life, but man, it does. It seems like a hard road to follow. And I don't want to go too deep into, I just had my first conversation with Rob just last week, actually. And it was the first conversation in a while. And I don't want to give away anything, but like his life is going through yet another transition, and it has to do directly with, he built this infrastructure for this moment in time right now. You know, he was just like, back then I had to prepare myself and then settle into a groove, let my nerves settle into this groove in order to see that right now is when it really matters. Because now people are coming to me having watched Ungrip and saying, you know, this is more relevant now than when it was when you put it out there. And so my inspiration to make the film was
intuitive. More,
it was, and they're all intuitive in their own way. But that one was really like, you know, Rob, people need to know what he's doing, and people need to question, why would you do that? You know, mm-hmm. They just need to see it being done. They need to see an example. Because in my previous films, it was a lot of my philosophies, my ideologies, my thought processes in my words being played out. I needed to dissociate and have somebody else show, this is what freedom looks like in a world where the whole freaking world, save for a small fraction of a percentage, is hypnotized by convenience, right? And that's really what a lot of it is. And, you know, to me, it took me a long time to get to now. I just released Esoteric Agenda 2 in May. And the big inspiration for that was, what the hell is happening in 2020? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, let's talk about it. Yeah. So how many years was that from your last film? You took a few years off. You're still doing media stuff. You're doing some stuff with Gaia and still creating. But to make an independent film, something must have inspired you to like, hey, I need to share how I'm feeling.
12 years. Yeah, it was 12 years.
12 years.
Esoteric Agenda 1. Yeah, you know what inspired it? Was the same thing that inspired the first Esoteric Agenda. It was that, you know what? I have this skill set, and I didn't even realize I had the time when I started it, but then quarantine hit. Now, I started after quarantine hit, and it took me a while to realize that this is the moment. Like, we all, it means something different to everybody else, and that's what it meant to me. Quarantine, the first global quarantine, I got to talk about this. Where do I talk about it? Online, where everybody's at. There's so much more content consumption because everyone's quarantined and everyone wants to know what's happening. So they're going to be searching for this kind of content. And then I did a little thought experiment, and I was like, everyone's freaking out right now about the quarantine, and nobody knew the riots and any of that stuff was to come. Well, some people I think may have known. But with that being, you know, before that, as I saw everyone freaking out and everyone was coming up with their theories, there's theory propagation. And I was like, okay, you know what? I made conspiracy theory films 12 years ago, not only to prepare some people, but also to prepare myself so we could graduate and then now help usher in the people that are awakening now. Meaning it's the same thing as a lot of schools. Like, you know, there's some schools in Russia where the kids are taught by older kids. So when those kids grow up, they become the teacher. And before you get out of school, you've played a holistic cycle. It's not just like we're preparing you for the workforce where you're going to do this task for 40 years until you either die or retire, right? No, this is you get taught, you learn, and then you teach. And that's what life is. It's kind of that thing. So I realized that there's going to be a lot of people waking up and a lot of people calling BS to the moment that they're in. But now it's not going to be like 7 years after 9/11 looking at the details and being like, wait a minute, that doesn't add up. It's more about people are waking up right now. People are their own independent journalists. I think the whole premise of Esoteric Agenda 2 took on its own life, and I didn't even realize. I started just, let's talk about coronavirus. And then it was like, well, why is everyone talking about 5G? And then it was like, well, what is 5G? Let's go deeper into that. And beyond the health thing, like, what is this technology going to allow some people to do and to know about us and where we are and what we do?
Yeah, so let's dive into that. So I guess my first question would be, like, the title Esoteric Agenda is assuming someone has an agenda. So can you sort of give us sort of the backdrop on, like, you know, do you believe there is a cabal or a group of people that has an agenda that they're trying to sort of enforce? Is that what you're trying to sort of shine light on through your movies? Is, like, you know, because you did call conspiracy theory movies and 12 years ago, you know, so just maybe a little bit around that, and are these things coming to light, and are they being more evident, or are they still in that conspiracy sort of theory space?
Yeah, well, you know, here's the thing. I think I want to definitely stay on your point, but, like, I think the world is waking up to something we don't have concepts and words for yet. And what is evidently the on the face of it, what it's going to look like is a lot of our concepts are going to start absorbing concepts around it. And I think what used to be just called alternative narratives, like, well, CNN has a narrative, but Fox also has a narrative. They both toe kind of a party line, but they're still a little different. Well, now conspiracy is pushing into that, because we're actually seeing things where it's like, because all conspiracy means is it's the same thing as business. We're conspiring together. And I forget who actually said this, but really conspiracies, most people, they think in old terms and old concepts of conspiracy. Oh, what does that mean? Well, that has to mean very rich, probably British aristocrats in a castle, you know, twiddling their thumbs in a black robe with, you know, strange symbols behind them. And there's oming and mantraing and, you know, like masks and wild orgies. That's not conspiracy these days. Conspiracy takes place in a business meeting, probably on some encrypted software, you know, nowadays, and you close it like a business deal. And guess what? It's not something where it's like, okay, how do we disadvantage millions of people today? Or how do we make sure that billions go without food? Those aren't the conversations. What it is it's very it's a defunct system. It's not meant to work. I don't believe the system that was created was meant to work the way that kids in school are being taught. It's all for freedom. It's not all for freedom, because I don't think the majority of humans throughout history have been in an optimal state to understand what would we do with freedom. Now I think we're getting to a point, and this is the whole point of, like, you know, is it a cabal with an agenda? Yes, there are many cabals with many agendas, but what's happening is even beyond them. And the esoteric agenda is something that you can't hold in words, you can't put on a piece of paper, you can only access in these meditative states, right? You always have access to it, but there's no person doing it, because I am connected to the all, and it's the all that's happening. You know, so then, I think that's more what I would go towards, because yes, there are conspiracies by individuals, but I'm not necessarily trying to point fingers at those things anymore. And when I do, I show that whether they know what they're doing, some of them know what they're doing. Some of them are doing it very intentionally. Some of them don't realize that they're serving something that actually is not so bad and so good for the planet. And I think those are the people who would be on the fence if they realized what they were really doing with their power, time, and energy.
And so do you think, in a sense, then, that this esoteric agenda, which is sort of like this thing that's happening that can be beyond an individual or one person's sort of like intentional sort of plan to, like, starve the world or whatever, do you think that, like, as a cycle in this reality that we live in, it has a purpose to sort of wake the rest of us up? So it's like, hey, like, there's all this dark things here. It's like, oh my God, that's scary. What am I going to do? Die, or are we going to evolve? You know, so maybe in a bigger way, it's bringing us to that edge where we really have to question our own mortality, have to question our ability to express and stand up. And, you know, when I look at it from a perspective of, like, sometimes, like, as a child, fear is the best teacher. Like, what is fearful to someone who's still evolving past, you know, this parent child? There's like this government that's like scary. Like, what are you going to do? How are you going to make this decision on a cellular level when you're ready to say, wait a minute, I don't need to sort of ascribe to this. I want to go this way. You know, maybe that's pushing us to evolve spiritually. And then maybe that's the whole point. Maybe this cyclical or cyclical thing has been happening for thousands of years. Maybe the technology is different. Maybe, you know, the part of the world that's happening is different. The things look different, but like the storyline, like the backstory is the same. Like, you know, there's this like danger threat, whether it's a plague, a government, you know, some existential threat or something that's pushing you to sort of question reality. It's like, how much of this do I want to take? So I find that very, very interesting. That whole concept, you know, something that I try to sort of, you know, when things feel a little dark for me, it's like, okay, wait, what's really happening here? You know, like what's the purpose? So anyways, so you decided then, okay, so that's, I guess, a bit behind the name. So you don't believe, you don't know specific, or you want to say specifically, it's like this tight knit group of people, but overall there's this agenda that is sort of unfolding that includes some of these things in it.
The very end of the film, I say, I'm excited because the esoteric agenda is right on cue. It's like a song, you know, it's right on cue. It's hitting right at the right time. And people are more ready now. And every time this cycle of what we would call economic calamity, global strife, division, these are all just words explaining what the thing looks like as it's going through its transformation. And so a lot of us get hung up on the looks of it, and we get hung up on the players. And, you know, it seems like the world loves bashing Trump because of the way he talks and the things he stands for, and all these concepts that we have built around a person we've never met, we will likely never meet. And at the end of the day, all our hate towards politicians, people, even like, you know, Bill Gates to the Rothschilds to Soros, it doesn't matter who we hate. The thing is we're holding hate, you know? So what I did was, it's, even if there really is, you know, a conspiracy out there of, you know, rich, powerful elite trying to disadvantage the world, which I believe there's absolutely that, but that also means there's absolutely the opposite trying to happen at the same exact time. So I don't bother myself using or building a narrative around who done it, because that's not the thing that will empower us. And the purpose of the film is to reach into the souls of people and, in a sense, illuminate the fact that all solutions are derived from within anyway. So even if the solution looks like it's out there, the solution also is very present and exists in here. And I can't control that, but I can control the inner. Mm-hmm. I can control my hate or disdain towards other people, or my even, and I think this is the biggest issue, is my immature and unevolved concept around what's happening. I think most people now, especially, I'm sorry, but like if you overly identify with left wing, right wing, conservatism, liberalism, any of those types of things, if you look at spiral dynamics, and Claire Graves has this model of this ladder that goes up and up and up, and each evolution of it is the bottom of it. It's almost like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but at the very bottom of it, it's tribalism and just staying safe and safety in the group. And so I think most people are still playing out the bottom of the ladder by whatever my family think, I want to think. Whatever my friends think, that's what I want to think. Why? Because I don't, deep down inside, I think all of us realize we don't have a grasp on reality until you start doing things that challenge your own core beliefs. But when everyone's caught up in challenging other people's core beliefs, then you get caught up in this pong game, right? It's like when you see two people arguing and you know that they both just need to calm down because they're both escalating it to a level that humans should not do that to humans. But they're doing it. And why can't they stop? Because they're both holding the polarity of that charge. So all of my films really try to show you, look, this is the charge. So you're the observer looking at the fight happening and you're like, wait a minute, that's not the way. So if you think talking about Trump on Facebook or talking about Bill Gates on Facebook is the way, it may be part of the way, but it can't be the whole story. That it has to be illuminating, like, guys, we are in a perfect moment. The problem is we haven't evolved ourselves past the, oh my God, this is crazy. It's really happening. So when people are having an ayahuasca awakening, most people get panicked simply because they've never felt this amazing euphoria before. So they get panicked by like, oh my God, this is overwhelmingly, you know, intense. It's not painful. It's just, oh, I don't know what to expect from it. Right. And then you start thinking, well, what if it's bad? And then you can't get out of that spiral. What if it's really bad? Oh my God, if it is, it's crescendoing. And that means it's getting worse. And then you hypnotize yourself. It's getting worse. And this is all bad. The world is not going through a good or a bad thing right now. It's liberating energy. Like, you know, when you chop down a tree, it's not taking up resources anymore. Right. And it's also not giving out resources anymore. So you've liberated energy in a way. And that's why, like, burning things, you're liberating its energy, and the breakdown of wood going back into the soil, it burns away the grass and stuff around it, because it's going through this process of returning back to the beginning of the process. It went to the end and now it's back at the beginning. So without getting too like mystical with it, what's actually happening on the planet right now is a lot of people are waking up, but that doesn't even mean good or bad. When you wake up, it's about the state that you're in. Because if you're in a panic state, because there's a lot of people that are all about, let's say, the Great Awakening that's happening. But you look at their feeds and they're constantly fighting, you know, and they're constantly putting this show of, I know more than you, when that's not the solution. The solution is not knowing more than our brothers, it's connecting, right?
Absolutely.
Brothers and sisters. So in a way, I feel like what's happening, even if we think we're waking up to like, oh man, you know what, coronavirus, I'm hip to what's really happening. All these protests, I'm hip to what's really happening. But the thing is you can be hip to the fact that it's a lie, you know? And I'm not saying that it is a fact. I'm saying you can be hip to the concept that it's all a lie, but that doesn't mean you're doing something good for your nervous system or your body, your family, your relationships, your spirituality. And in a way, other people might be looking to you for an example. Like, that's what children do when they're like, I just fell over and, you know, skinned my knee or smacked my face. Should I cry? So they look to their parents. And so that's when I realized, you know what? I'm not just this kid in my 20s anymore that made these films that like shook the cages anymore. I'm now somebody who people are looking to for answers because they're panicked and they don't know what's happening with their business. They don't know what's happening with their family. They don't know if they want to bring kids into the world. Mm-hmm. These are serious psychological traumatizing, potentially traumatizing events for people. I don't know if I want to bring children into this world. They have to really be in fear. And so that's really where I believe that this is no longer a profession for me. This is what I was put on earth to do. So yes, I'm a filmmaker, but I'm here to hold space for an awakening. Because if nobody holds space for the awakening, then it's like me when I was, you know, having, you know, I could have potentially had a mind-blowingly scary bad trip before I had a shaman to hold space for me. You know, I think the world is going through transformation and we need more people like yourself and myself, not to give the narrative, but to challenge the way we think about narratives. Critical thinking is more important than like, oh, I believe this person, so I'm just going to keep listening to this person. They'll keep feeding me truth. Well, that's outsourcing it. And that's not sharpening the blade of your discernment and critical thinking. We need to wake up, meaning we need to empower ourselves. And if my films don't do that, then I didn't hit the nail on the head, because they're all meant to empower us, not to be thinking like, oh, thank God, this QAnon, you know, that kind of stuff is telling me Trump is going to save us. Well, that's great, even if he's trying to. But the thing is, does it have to be an external source? And do we just become that child that needs saving? That's not what Christ seem to have wanted, or what the Buddha wanted. That's not what spirituality is about anyway. Is, you know, no spiritual tradition has ever been built around, wait for the second coming of Christ. You don't have to do anything. He'll just take care of it. No. How do we bring about the second coming of Christ? We need to build, and it, literally, we are the cells building a body and holding a space. And through that channel, that's where our salvation will come from. But it doesn't mean that came and saved us like a transformer from the sky. We had to build it from our own belief systems being torn down to the ground, from our own, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, discipline and meditation, fasting, those types of things. We had to challenge ourselves to get to the place where we could bring about our own salvation. That's what
I think. Yeah, I think that's beautiful, beautifully said. And when you think about all of those spiritual masters, they went through their own transformations of like questioning and fasting and 40 days in the desert and Buddha finding the middle way after going, you know, to the extreme, to the other side of like total abstinence. And all of these guys, it seems like they had their moments where they just had to sort of disconnect and really just like sit in silence and reflect on like, what is the path forward? And, you know, if you believe in that, if you believe in spirituality, if you believe you have a spirit, like what better environment to test your spiritual growth than something that we're going through right now, you know, and how can I react? How can I show up? How can I evolve? You know, and like, I don't know what comes next after this. Personally, like I've died many times. I've seen beyond that there is something beyond, but where that exists in for my current sort of understanding of reality, it's not clear. But what I believe is that the way you react and act and learn in this life from a soul level is going to determine where you need to learn in the next one.
Yeah.
You know, so you have these opportunities that keep throwing at you. And usually they're through challenges, you know, temptations, fear, chaos, you know, uncertainty. When no one's looking, what are the decisions you're making? You know, when you want to sort of express yourself, are you fighting someone or are you sort of just saying like, hey, like let's think about this, or let's have this conversation. And I try like on Facebook to like neutralize, like, hey guys, I'm going to talk about something very controversial here, but anyone that comments, like don't attack the commenter, say, hey, you're an idiot for posting that. Like comment on what they're saying. Say, hey, you know what? I don't agree. And I don't agree because this is what I found. Here's what I've researched, or here's my personal theory, belief, or opinion. Not saying like, hey, you're an idiot for pointing that. And I think that's a big problem that we're having right now, where people are put into these boxes, you know, you're black or you're white. So if you go against the black narrative, you're a racist. You go against the white narrative, you're not part of this. And I've learned more about racism in the last 2 weeks than I ever thought I would in my entire life, hearing from both sides of the argument, whether it's police brutality, whether it's systemic racism, where it's, you know, black people opposing those views about like violence in the black community and poverty and where, how these all play in. It's so complex. It's not just like this or that, which makes me more think is like some sort of political thing with the media just blowing it up to make more division. But I'm not going to sort of say that is one thing or another, but those are all potentialities. But it's like, if I'm a Republican and I agree with something a Democrat says, the Republicans are going to hate me. So I'm shamed, I'm guilty. I don't want to say that. Even if I believe it, I can't even express that. And vice versa, if you're on the other side, you know, so it's like put people in the box, like they make you hate Trump so much that even if you agree with one of his policies, you can't sort of express that. Like, hey, wait a minute, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Maybe 90% of the other things I disagree with this guy. He's crazy. He might be an asshole in some things. But like, wait a minute, that thing really made a lot of sense. Like, we should consider this as a whole. But it's like, you're either on this side or that side. If you go against anything, like, hey, man, you can't do that. Which is very, I think, dangerous in the world that we live in. It's like, how come we're not able to sit around a table and say like, let's take these blue and red, black and white, you know, off the table and say like, hey, what's really the issue here? Like, let's like really have an open conversation about what we really agree with, what makes sense. But it's like you're pushing into these boxes, and it's like right from the top down. It's like the media, the politicians. It's like so divisive, so like crazy. Mm. But anyways, I just wanted to sort of bring that up because I think it really was resonating what you were saying about that and expression and all that kind of stuff. To go back to the movie, though, there's a couple interesting things that are very relevant now that you sort of talk about. Like, I think one thing you sort of talk about was coronavirus. The other thing was about 5G. You know, a lot of people are questioning 5G. I've been sort of on the fence about 5G. I think you brought up some points about 5G and corona being related and some things that said have not. I've heard, like, even down in the jungles right now in South America, a lot of them are getting hit hard with COVID where there's absolutely no 5G. I know there's 5G satellites in the world. I don't know if they're testing those. So I guess, you know, you want to talk a bit about sort of some of the main core concepts of Esoteric Agenda 2 and what you think about them and why you think they're relevant right now to discuss.
Yeah, you know, so what's funny is like I spend so much time on Esoteric Agenda 2, but it's speaking about very timely things. So it's also it's kind of like a news clip in a way, an extended news clip. So when I get into coronavirus, really all I'm doing is I'm showing, as usual, there's a mainstream narrative, and then there's a narrative saying this is not looking at it the right way. It's intentionally omitting the right information. It's making the world believe this, and it knows that people are going to wake up to the opposite, but it knows it's not critical mass. Critical mass won't wake up to it. And I kind of feel like maybe they were a little bit wrong. And when I say they, I mean a specific grouping of people that I won't name, and grouping of foundations that really have a vested interest in the idea that there's this novel virus that's a lot more dangerous than the seasonal flu going around. And the numbers are crazy. And we've been seeing a lot of stuff now saying, like, you know, wait a minute, some of the original numbers, even nations are saying it doesn't add up. The global
conflicting numbers and theories and tests, yeah, and all this stuff. I think a good sort of test is going to be, like, we've had pretty much no social distancing for the last 2 weeks since these riots started. So, like, we're going to see what's going to happen to the numbers around the world. You know, like, people are just, I think they want an excuse to protest, just to get out and just, like, release some of that energy you were talking about earlier. And you know, like, it's going to sort of tell a bit of that tale. But it seems like, to me, coronavirus talk sort of just disappeared the last 2 weeks. Like, it's still kind of there in the background, but it went from, like end of the world to, like, hey, we're not really talking about this anymore. So
it'll come back. It'll come back, and a lot sooner than most people think. You know, if you look at, like, events, there was the coronavirus event, and nobody was talking about anything but that. People who were going to schedule interviews for their podcasts before that decided, hey, could we talk about coronavirus? Because nobody's watching or listening to content that doesn't have to do with coronavirus right now. And then right on the heels of that, this next event, this, okay, now military in the street, first time that's ever happened. First time we ever had a global quarantine, because we never had the infrastructure to have a global anything before. And now we have military on the streets of the United States, the number one, you know, supposedly military and economic superpower, going against, what is it, posse comitatus, where the military is not supposed to do anything, any kind of patrolling on domestic soil. And so the film, really, it got into that. It got into, there's a lot of questions about coronavirus, and why is everybody talking about coronavirus on the more alternative narrative? Why are they all talking about 5G? So 5G, roughly, it's telecommunications. We're on 4G right now, so it's a faster, you know, form of wireless. It's a faster internet, faster phones. That's the concept. And there's all this new technology. Okay, it's a new technology. It's a different bandwidth because these frequencies are saturated. So now we need to go up here, and we need a lot more technology because these frequencies are the long, slow waves, so they can travel farther. These are the very short, rapid waves, so they get blocked by trees, and we need to cut down trees, and we need many more of them just to have our 5G service. So people are starting to have adverse effects. And, you know, one of them might be oxygen uptake. You know, there's Dr. Sherry Mani, Dr. Thomas Cowan, saying that it could be the coronavirus that we're seeing. A lot of the symptoms of it could be actually caused by this technology and toxicity, radiation toxicity that excretes toxic matter from the cells. And that's what looks like the coronavirus. So that was Dr. Thomas Cowan. And then I did my due diligence, because, again, I'm not trying to get people to think any one way. So I then showed, but there's this other guy who's saying, well, then why aren't there petri dishes of human cells in laboratories everywhere just getting coronavirus? Why aren't we hearing about that? Well, maybe we're not hearing about it because it's just not being reported, or maybe it's not happening. So that's interesting. And then there's also,
what if there's both? Like, what if there is this sort of, like, low level flu like strain of virus that can be used as something that can sort of answer some of these questions, where it's like, hey, well, there is something here, but there's also this, but it's at the same time, so it's even more confusing to sort of pinpoint.
Right. And so another thing with that is a lot of the testing. So then you have to question, and I didn't get into this in the film, but the testing, was it Madagascar?
Or Madagascar, yeah. Madagascar.
Yeah, where he was testing mangoes. And he found,
yeah, pawpaw and goat. And.
Mm-hmm. So then, like, what does the testing really mean, and what do these numbers really mean? And so I quickly got past the coronavirus part, and then I started to talk, you know, I didn't really even go into the fact that, oh, we're all quarantined at home very much. And I just went into, well, what is 5G? Everyone's talking about 5G. So I just had this natural evolution happening where coronavirus conversation gave way to 5G. Okay, 5G doesn't seem very safe if you listen to these people. But if you listen to Glenn Beck talking to Jeff Brown, he says, oh, all that radiation stuff is a conspiracy theory made by telecom companies that are competitors to US 5G proliferation because China, you know, China is ahead of us in 5G, and they don't want us to catch up. So they're making all of us, you know, crazy alternative theorists
And people are burning down 5G towers. Like, yeah. It's interesting that Canada is trying to sort of bring in the Huawei 5G right now. I've been hearing about that. I read an article about they're trying to sort of implement the Huawei 5G. And it's interesting because, like, Trump and the U.S. has sort of been this sort of
banned Huawei technology.
Yeah, and there's sort of like feels like there's this tension building between like supporting China and like us as Canada and U.S. I thought we would have a lot better relationship, and then it goes back into all these conspiracy theories about like Trudeau and who his alliances really are, and like which side of, you know, if you're into that kind of stuff. So, anyways, but do you think it is dangerous? Do you think like it's conspiracy? Like, what's your consensus then? Like,
so I showed both sides in the film, or I at least showed one of the alternative sides, saying like, well, it's passed off as, so like, if let's just say it's dangerous and that's what everyone believes. So there's this other side saying like, guys, calm down. It's all just a conspiracy theory. Well, show us that it's safe. Where's the science? Where are the case studies that actually show that you've sat a rat next to a 5G, telecommunications box, and you irradiated it for days and nothing happened? Where is that evidence?
Well, have they shown any cases of like proving that it causes like some of these conspiracy theorists, deniers? Have they shown cases of like, hey, like I put this plant beside this 5G tower and it died? I know I've seen some crazy videos online of like birds falling down and like
birds bees. And bees. And, yeah.
You know, like it's interesting. That could be anything really. You know, it's like for me, like I heard this on like Joe Rogan, I think, and Alex Jones. Like once you believe one conspiracy theory, you're much more inclined to believe all of them. Mm-hmm. That's just where your mind wants to go. It's like, oh, I don't trust the government. I don't trust big business. So like, oh, these guys are out to get us. Now I need to burn down all the 5G towers. Like, wait a minute. You know, like, is that the way? And I think that we also have to remember that we're demanding this. We're pushing the limits of like video conferencing, of like technology. We want flying cars. We want robots to wipe our ass. We want all this crazy shit. And that comes at a cost, or creates a demand to provide a bigger service. So in the capitalistic world we live in, if you're demanding companies like, hey, give me this service, I'm willing to pay for it, what are they going to do? They're going to bring it out and deliver it as soon as possible. Right. So does that mean that they're trying to harm people? Like some people are saying like, oh, this is to operate like heavy Chinese robot military that's going to police everyone. Like that's possible. But is that really what's happening? Is my mind trying to believe that? And I don't want to be naive because like one part of me is like, oh, wait, that's exactly what they're doing. But maybe it's like, hey, these guys are just trying to make money. They're not really looking too much at what the cost is because, you know, some people might get sick and some people might die. But that's the cost of every business. And that goes the same for the vaccine argument. It's like, are they really trying to like depopulate us, or do they believe they have a product that works? And in that, there's gonna be 3% who are gonna get autism or get an adverse effect, you know? So then it's like, which side do you wanna believe? Cause I can make either narrative very compelling.
Yeah.
Right? And I think there's certain people who believe both of them like fully and completely. So I guess if you want to comment on that in regards to
fun. Riff on that. Here's the thing that I like that you're doing is you're allowing yourself to go anywhere. You're not like, well, I need to entertain these ideas, but not conspiracy theories. It's good to go there. It's definitely good to go there. I think most people when you're right, when you believe one conspiracy theory, it's easier to kind of hop on the bandwagon because it's a trend. And I don't even think that's wrong. I think it's incomplete. Because the thing is I believe anything that can make a logical argument as well as disbelieve it. Because I also see it as, well, it's cleverly worded. I could be being duped by logic or rhetoric, if you will. So the thing is what's the transcended way of it? Well, you hold both of them. There's no need, like one seems paradoxical to the other. Well, you either have to believe this or that. That's limiting. That's very limiting. So how do you transcend it? These are tools, and consciousness can go anywhere it wants and do anything it wants. So you go into these places having contingency plans, knowing that you will fall into it a bit. You will see the logic. You will, if you open your mind enough to it, you will see, well, that's completely plausible. Completely plausible. And then you go back into, well, man, this agenda's been going on for thousands of years. And it's you can see the links. You can see all the data lining up and the lines making sense. And then you can go to somebody else who on the other side who's just like, yeah, you can look at it that way, but like that was just erroneously drawing these dots when the trajectory is the same. Yes, a lot of money and wealth has continually been pushed into smaller and smaller hands. But the thing is if good people were to wake up to the fact that they could have all the money and all the power by this scheme, and they start using the scheme, and then they use the scheme more and more and more, are they evil? Right? Are our overlords, these elite 1%, are they really evil? Or is it really hard to globally dominate? You know? Because and then do you just let it all happen independently? Because then if you let it all happen independently and you just leave people to their own devices, you still need to monitor them, because what if you don't realize that they're mounting an attack by amassing an army and you don't realize it because you think everyone's living in harmony? So that's why we need military. And I get why we are in this state of we need the military industrial complex. We can't take all our nukes down. Like, I get that feeling. We can't let go, even though you see that the water's right there and you're not too far from it, but you just have this fear of letting go and dropping down. I think that what you're saying, and I'll relate it back to 5G. I think that 5G is, yet again, it's not good nor bad. These are all tools. And all of life, here's how I say it. A lot of people, when they love putting the terms good and bad on something, it's because they feel like the world and life is meant to go a certain way. Like, I figured it out. The world and life is meant to go this certain way. And if it doesn't go that way, then it's wrong. It's bad. If it does go that way, then it's going good, right? And so the evolved or the transcended way of looking at that is these are all just evolutions and these are all just tools. And really the only thing we can ever take with us after we die is a lesson. It's the wisdom, which looks identical to love, because it is. Real wisdom understands that love is not some goopy, soft, unintelligent force. It is the force that makes the grass grow and the trees, you know, grow. It is the force that allows the sun to come down and interact with the environment and have these ecosystems thriving and playing off of one another. And yes, they eat one another and they upcycle into one another and everything, you know. I think
it's unconditional, and it's unconditional.
It's not, unconditional, there's no conditions. And there's no such thing as waste to it. So here's what I think about 5G. I think 5G is simply the next evolution of what we have been asking for. Because if numbers don't lie, more and more people are on the internet now. More and more people are using cell phones now. More and more people are moving their businesses there now. Everything is moving in that direction. And in many ways, I think the people who are just saying it's irradiating us, I think they're right, but they're incomplete. And the thing is when you're right, but incomplete, then your solution is half-assed or completely in the wrong direction. So a lot of people are saying, well, that means if it's irradiating us, we need to tear down these 5G towers. And I, like, obviously you're like, okay, so you are promoting what is a violent act. It's a destruction of property. And whether you agree or not that it should be there, I get the protest, but I don't feel like it's tactical or evolved. It's not strategic enough. And so for me, I feel like people have no problem with technology making our lives easier. People have no problems with the convenience that all this technology is affording us more and more and more. People were like, you know what? The greatest thing that happened during coronavirus quarantine was I was able to Skype, you know, or Zoom with all of my family, and we got to see each other, and it got us all to slow down. And what does that mean? That means if you're not just focusing on how terrible this is and, oh my God, it's destroying the economy. And yes, there's a lot of change coming, and that doesn't mean that it's not difficult, but it simply means that are you unable to see that through the process of something dying and being kind of dismantled, that means it's already being uptaken into something different, something newer. And the thing is now that that's happening, it's young and it's impressionable, meaning like children, if you guide it correctly, the future can be beautiful. So I think 5G is in its current, there's no way it's neutral. There's no way you can have frequency technology going up everywhere at an incredible rate, unseen before on this planet, to a magnitude we can't even wrap our heads around yet. I mean, we're talking 4G, which is what we're on now, is a garden hose of information. 5G is the channel. There's no way that this is neutral to beings of frequency, which we are. We know at the fundamental core of who we are vibrations. And we hold that together by our lineage and our DNA and everything that made us who we are today. But that doesn't mean what's happening right now is the end of the world and it's all terrible. It simply means it's a transformation and we need to engage with it. That's the biggest problem, because before, everyone has outsourced it and been like, when is some politician finally going to do something right by me, by us, by we the people? And everybody's waiting for this grand savior, whether it be political or spiritual or the second coming of whatever. They're all waiting for it outside of us. I think we need to engage with it. And the way to do that is to demand better, safer, tested technology in ways like 5G. Did you know that it can be therapeutic? 5G,
I had no idea.
Millimeter waves can be therapeutic, but only done at the right moments in the right way. And all the great Martin Paul, Dr. Arthur Furstenberg, they're like, you know what, if you were to like not have constant radiation going out, but whenever there's a signal, you get a red flag, okay, bam, it flicks on for a second, you send the signal, and then bam, you're not flooded with as much radiation, right? So there's other ways of doing it. If you're in your house, go to wired instead of wireless. You know, think of Faraday fabric and stuff. You know, we shouldn't have to do all these interventions for technology that's being rolled out. We should have a say, but should the least informed people have a say? Right? If we just hate the other side,
well,
and we're
that's
like,
the thing. Like,
screwing us.
Who is the least? Who becomes the least informed? The people just watching the YouTube videos of some guy that's like, "Hey, I saw these bees fall beside a 5G tower. We need to burn down every 5G tower in the world or we're going to fall like these bees." Well, my first reaction was, I got to find that 5G towers near me because I got to burn them down. Like, wait a minute. I guess like I'm more on the side of like safety testing first, but I also believe that things happen that are sort of like unfolding and they're going to happen whether, you know, like obviously like this natural pushback is like a natural thing of how this is going to evolve, you know? And I think it's quite possible that although right now we don't have experience with 5G, I think the human body evolves much quicker than we're taught. Like they say, it takes a million years to evolve. I think we're much more adaptable where we can shift quickly. So
a
like
generation or two.
What's that?
In a generation or two.
Or sooner. Like I've seen people like just change their patterns, like whether it's just going to an ice bath, like change the way their autonomic nervous system works.
Yep.
So like, I'm not saying we're gonna start flying in a generation, but you know, this new thing comes into our awareness. And at first it's like you said, it was a detoxifying effect where like all these toxins start excreting and it flu-like symptoms. Okay, so something's happening there. Now, does it happen to people who are just overly toxic and obese and stuff like that? What happens to healthy people? Does it not affect them at all? I don't know. We don't know yet. And maybe that's just a sign like, hey, wait a minute. There's these higher frequencies that we can interact with. But if you're not healthy, you can't even go there. Because look what's happening to you. You're going to sort of, we don't know. And like the last electrification, there's this theory that, you know, when we electrified the globe back in the early 1920s, 1918, around there, we had the Spanish flu. Because all these people are like not used to this thing. Well, humanity didn't get wiped off the earth. We've evolved in a way, like technologically, we've sort of come this thing. So maybe this is the next phase of that. Maybe right now some people are going to get sick. Maybe it won't be fair to a lot of people who sort of die. And like, but in nature, you know, the weakest die off, and, you know, sort of like, it's like this natural progression. And, you know, if we're trying to play God and say, hey, these people should die, these people shouldn't die, you know, like it's not natural in a sense, but if you look at the earth as a petri dish, everything came out of here, including technology, sort of evolved here. You know, so if you're looking from the outside, it's like, well, that's a natural evolution. They're building whatever. You know, like an anthill to us might look like something natural. Why isn't a skyscraper natural to someone that's observing from outside? So I think there's a lot of questions that come up within me. It's like, okay, maybe there is supposed to be 5G. Maybe we're going to evolve. Maybe that's going to push our evolution. Maybe this new frequency might change things. You know, one theory that I heard was that the missing link in evolution was a supernova exploded in a nearby galaxy. And when those rays hit the earth, the light interacted with our DNA and we sort of shifted into a new consciousness. Is that probable? I don't know. Is it possible? I believe so. So like, we don't know what the outcomes of this 5G is going to be. I think we're demanding it. I think we're sort of need more safety, but I think there's so many potential things that we're not even taking into consideration.
Yeah. You know, like I want to riff on that for a second because, so I keep up to date on outer narratives, and those outer narratives are just, you know, like I watch Fox News, I watch CNN, I watch MSNBC, I watch Russia Today, I watch Alex Jones, David Icke, Valuetainment, Russell Brand, Joe Rogan. I watch, you know, like women, kids, you know, theories coming from anywhere and everywhere. Max Egan, you know, is a really good one. And one thing that I have noticed, and what I like is you're alluding to, is the fact that there are some really intelligent people, conspiracy theorists, that they can explain to you how beautifully powerful human consciousness is and the human is, right? But we're doomed, right? That's the idea, is we're doomed. And if you look at it, there's treasonous, disgusting humans out there. And we get, like, you see what's coming out. It's just like, they're disgusting. And that's what we are holding. And in a sense, we are allowing ourselves to go there and hold space for that. And so I think what the biggest problem is yes, there are things. I'm all for testing first as well. And what I'm saying doesn't negate what they're saying, because I can be all, well, we can adapt to whatever. And, you know, all we got to do is really, yes. But I also believe that energy directed weapons could kill me before I figure out how to transcend into a different dimension where I'm immune to it. Not even saying that that's the process of it. But so the thing is there are very real threats, but it's the same story. We're moving into the future. It's always technology. It's always something more, like, you know, well, what's the difference between an ant building an ant hill and a human building a tower? Well, the ants aren't intelligent enough to wipe themselves off the planet. We are. Okay. But let's extrapolate that further. Why is that the only thing humans seem to be capable of, yet we haven't done it?
How does an anteater find an anthill? They made it too big that now it's a target. So in a way, they sort of exposed themselves by creating more and more and more. Now they've created a target for, it's like, oh, I know what that is. I know I'm going to find food there. And maybe we're just not seeing it. I think one thing too, like conspiracy theorists, like at one point the internet was like created to spy on us, and the advance of Big Brother. And maybe it still is used, but there's so much information they can barely keep up. They need to try to create artificial intelligence to track us, to listen to our phone calls. But that also exposed these deep state plans, whatever you want to call it, was the advance of technology, internet, people being able to share, openly speak on the internet, take videos simultaneously where you have all these firsthand reports. Like, what a blessing. We never knew that. If you thought that at the beginning, right when the internet came out, that we should stop this now because we get spied on, we wouldn't have uncovered what we have now from these conspiracy theories in the same way. So we really don't know to what effect it's really going to have. Like, who knows that, you know, in the future, you know, 5G turns into something where they create robots that pollinate the flowers and clean the oceans and does something that we couldn't do right now. Like, who knows what outcomes can come out of it, right? And that's, again, going back to our previous, is like when you look at one negative outcome and you go into that way, it's like there's an equally opposing possibility or probability on the other side that maybe we just haven't been able to see yet. And maybe I'm an optimist, and maybe like all the stuff I'm saying is like people are listening are like, this guy is just so out to lunch. But maybe that's what helps keep me sane, is like saying, like, because at one time I was so deep in the conspiracy side of things where I was just like, there's the cabal, they're trying to put fluoride in our water, they're doing all these crazy things that are trying to kill me, and I'm screwed. What's the point of living? And I realized that I was dying already. I was in this process of dying because I was submitting to like I have no control. And then decided, what do I want to do? I'm going to live every day until I die. So if I die because of that, I want to live every day in this living energy, in this like creation, in this like just doing what I can. And this is part of the experience. Like you said, like that treasonous sort of bad guy. If you're a soul wanting a challenge to evolve, you need an equally opposing threat that's going to challenge you. So whether it's like those people that you said are conspiracy theorists that are talking about human evolution, they need someone to challenge them. And like, am I going to say like, hey, if I had the opportunity, would I kill this guy? You know, you're a conscious being, whoever it is. You're face to face with Soros and you have a gun or you have a knife and you feel he is the devil. Are you going to kill him? Would that make you more conscious? Would that make you more evolved as a spiritual being? You probably wouldn't know until you're in that situation. Are you martyring yourself for the better of good kind? Like, you know, and like, you can say what you will, but you know, if you think the matrix is the reality is a matrix that we're sort of going in, that's a computer program, you know, like you said, the energy directed weapon is going to kill you, you know, but when you start doing psychedelics, you realize like, hey, like this is just an experience. I'm going to die and have another different experience. Like, okay, like yeah. Maybe there's different things to sort of consider. Anyways, I went on a whole tangent there, but if
no, and I love it. I mean, basically what we're talking about is, you know, to me, I believe in magic. And it's, you know, I think that we are all magicians and we are all creating our reality independently, individually, and collectively. And also from, you know, what we would call the past, there's still lingering energies. From what we would call the future, there's energies that are being born and new concepts that are being born. And we only see the final stage of them. And the final stage is like when four or five people invent the same thing at the same time. They never had communication with one another. It happens so often, it's called simultaneous invention or creation or something like that. They have a term for it because it happens so often. You could look at statistically and be like, statistically, that does not make sense. That wouldn't happen by just random occurrence, because in my belief, none of this is random. What seems to us as random is simply outside of our concept, because we believe we should be able to wrap our heads around what's happening and what's playing out. So I feel like the thing is how, what kind of world do you wish to live in? And why aren't you living as if you're there? As all the spirit traditions, all the medicine traditions, all magic, all alchemy, all self-actualization, self-help, Tony Robbins, you name it. None of it says, well, keep waiting for that distant time in the future and realize that it's not now. No, you need to actually live as if it's right now. So you need to be very honest with yourself. Does the media that you consume actually serve that state of being that you wish to manifest? Does the media that you concern yourself with, is it relevant to anything that you can act upon? You know, hating Trump, the only thing you can do is I'm going to hold hate in my heart 10% more today because of what he just tweeted, right? All it's doing is affecting you.
And I'm going to hate every Republican because of this one person said this one thing. Like, he said a comment that triggered me. Anyone that has a red MAGA hat on, I'm going to hate them.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't even know this person. They could be like the your best friend, you know, like.
Yeah. You're only getting to know your way around a harmful tool, a tool that can bring harm, right? I've never seen, you know, a truly inspired or awakened person using hate using aggression for anything other than a reminder that that's not what builds a beautiful future. It's not. And so for the people that like cannot get off, like, yes, but they're pedophiles and they're this and they're that, and like, I get it. And none of that is a world that I want to live in. So I'm living as if I'm not ignoring it because I'm exposing it with my films. That's the number one thing. Like the new age idea is, well, just don't think about it. I saw this one Hyperborean solution to 5G. And it's like, well, it's all frequency. And if you just ignore the fact that it exists, it won't exist. And it's that kind of like, what's that cat, Schrodinger's cat, you know, like the cat is neither living nor dead until you look at it, right? That type of thing. Well, that could be too conveniently like just burying your head in beautiful sand, right? It's the new agey beautiful sand, and I can't see any of the bad stuff. I'm going to tune you out. I think we should give equal time to the problems out there. And then we need to cultivate a state of how is this perfectly orchestrated for my awakening, for all of our awakening. So let's look at all the stuff that we're afraid of right now. The only exercise that will make that complete rather than incomplete and therefore not effective at all, the only thing that will make looking at the problems a solution is by recognizing that inherent within every problem, like a problem, 1 + 1, well, inherent within that is the answer. It's 2, right? You just put the equal sign and you show, listen, 2 is the same as this. It's just this is divided up. But the thing is there is no disconnection between any of this. So what it is I don't think that we need to deconstruct the world as it is back down to, you know, ground zero and then rebuild it anew. I think we're right about there. We just need to transition into the proper use of this technology, right? Like I said, 5G millimeter waves can be therapeutic. So let's riff on that. If it's financially incentivized for them to come up with scalar waves that work harmoniously with biological, you know, biological function and cell function, could we make technology that is not only coming to the same effect of having our cell phones, but it's not only neutral, but it's actually kind of positive.
Beneficial. Right? Yeah, why not? Why you know, not?
The only negative would be is if you do it at night, it might keep you up and stuff like that. Like same thing with caffeine. We're allowed to have caffeine. We're not, you know, protesting in the street because, you know, or with alcohol. Like there are people who are protesting that, but for the most part, we're perfectly fine with millions of people dying from alcohol from, you know, poor infrastructure, you know, or whatever it might be, because that's old. 5G is new and it's the new threat. Let's get over it, guys. There's always a new threat. There's always a new face. It was Osama bin Laden. It was Saddam Hussein 10 years ago. Now it's technology and Bill Gates and Soros. In 10 years from now, it's going to be, you know, something altogether new. And if we get to that point and we're like, well, now it's all screwed, right? We're not going to blame ourselves because we weren't equipped with those tools. So I think what we need to do with 5G and all this telecommunications platform is use it to spread art, not just any art, evolved conversations. So if 10 years ago, it was all right to be like, you know, they're screwing us and the Illuminati and rah, rah, rah. Now we need to be like, okay, what do we do with it? And how do we cultivate love? Mm-hmm. How do we cultivate intelligent, evolved solutions that are never disconnected from love? Never. And if it's disconnected from love, then it's ostracized. It's not a part of the agenda. The real esoteric agenda, the one that I know is playing itself out right now, the real esoteric thing that's happening is the thing that it has always wanted to happen. It's God waking up to itself, getting to know who it is through its 7 billion little fractals on Earth and more than that, because we're talking about all the beings. We want to wake up. And the only thing keeping us from waking up is us. And the biggest impediment, the biggest reason why we keep avoiding our own awakening is because we're not equipped with, the infrastructure is not teaching us and inspiring us to realize that the solution is here all along. Let your anxiety go. It's here. Let all of your hatred towards outside forces go. It's already here. The solution is already here. Mm-hmm. So the more we keep hearing the narrative that it's Bill Gates' fault, it's George Soros's fault. It's Trump's fault. The more we hear those narratives, the more we're all we have is the language to describe the problem. We don't have any language or concepts to build the infrastructure for the solution. So that's why art is the solution. We have incredible technology. Every one of us has a phone with a great camera and next to free software where you can edit stuff together, become your own news station and spread it across the world and even become a millionaire from it. That infrastructure is not only here, but it's being used, and the way to do it is being spread through this infrastructure. So let's not throw this infrastructure away. Let's make it better. And that's what life has always been about. It's never been about, well, let's go back to the beginning. Let's create Eden in a new way. Because if we try and go back and throw away all our technology, how many people are going to be kicking themselves like, fuck, I wish I had my phone right now, right? I hate these trees. And
well, like, imagine like 1,000 years ago, you're having a conversation. It's like, you know, I wish I had a device that would answer any single question. I could call someone anywhere around the world, see them face to face. And even if I want something, I can get anything from around the world brought to me tomorrow, like with the push of a button. That's impossible. Like that will never, ever happen. Like that's just crazy. Even 100 years ago, 50 years ago, but now we have this tool that we can do all that.
And the only difference is we have the same old mentality with brand new technology.
Yes.
Same old technology, or the old mentality of this isn't perfect. We need it to be perfect. This is actually all screwed. It's all corrupt. The end is always nigh. And when are we going to be saved? And you don't hear anyone except for the enlightened sages, the ones that sit there and can speak to you in perfect parables, right? That kind of are paradoxical to people at the bottom of that spiral ladder. But what do they always say? We're in harmony. Wake up. This is perfect. Wake up. The solution is in your heart. Wake up. Mm-hmm. Those are not your enemies. Wake up. Delusion, self-delusion, things that keep you asleep. That's the problem. And you have the control over that. Wake up, right? It's now. It's here. When are we going to realize that we are here? We have life. Nothing was ever owed to us. We could have been born 20,000 years ago. And, you know, this one has a crooked spine, off the cliff, right? This baby, I think it's retarded, off the cliff, right? But we weren't born into that world. We're born today. So we have all these tools at our disposal, and we're using them like cavemen, beating each other over the heads with them, rather than using them in sophisticated and evolved ways that are rooted in love. And this is why what I do is I'm building a mystery school. It really is a mystery school. And it's going to be subscriber based, where there's levels of coming into it, and there's retreats, and there's things and round tables,
all
revolving around the core of, we have what we need. There's nothing new that we need. We don't need a new politician or savior. We don't need new technology. We need nothing but an awakening. So all the technology that we have can speed that along, but we need the infrastructure. Because what happened 10 years ago when people started waking up to conspiracy? There was no infrastructure to be like that shaman who held me when I was going through my awakening under ayahuasca. That was an infrastructure built through thousands of years of these Amazonian shamanic tribes that are like, when you wake up, that doesn't mean good. You need to build the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You need to hold it in the right way. So my mystery school that I'm building, that eventually is, I won't be the face of it, I'm just going to be involved in it, is the infrastructure. It's basically, I know that people are waking up now, but the thing is the infrastructure is not there for them to be, what if I have anxiety? What if I lose family members because we don't even have the same language anymore? What if I lose friends? What if my, you know, all these things that are a byproduct of awakening, how do we account for all of that? Mm-hmm. How do we make an engine that streamlines that process and is adaptive and very sensitive to people having their own unique quirks, but realizing at the end of the day, you want to be held by mother. You want to know you're safe. How do you build that kind of support system for a massive awakening? Because I don't think the awakening is going to feel comfortable happening until we have that. But once we have that, then it's like putting that out. It's like once you build it, they will come, right? That's exactly what
same page. Is. Yeah, we're working on similar things in our studio in person, and I feel the same calling. You know, it's like, how do we create that support system as we're all waking up? And I think we were talking about this before we actually start recording, but maybe this is what waking up feels like. It's this chaos. It's this like birthing process. It's like the butterfly over-consuming to the point it can't even move anymore. And it thinks it's dying, closes up in this cocoon. It comes out as this totally evolved being that can fly and smell flowers and, you know, so maybe this is what it feels like. And I'm sure, and I know for a fact, everything that's going on in the world, every single human is also feeling it on their micro level. Things are coming up. Anxiety's coming up. Fears are coming up. All of this shit. And I think this is what waking up feels like. This is what evolving individually and collectively feels like. And, you know, maybe in the process, you can't see past it, but it's like, you know, surrender, trust the process, keep working on yourself, like you keep mentioning. And things are going to happen. Things are going to change. We're all going to evolve, and some slower than others. Some will be painful and resist. Others have been doing this work for a while. They're more, you know, aware and ready. And some people are just learning right now. And the ones that are waking up, exactly the same experience you had, is like, I wished I had a tribe, a mentor, a place where I can go and share, people to listen to me that are also going through the same thing. And that would have helped me so much. And I said, okay, like I got to create something like that, you know, in Toronto. Online is also the next phase too. So I agree with you 1000%. And so I think we should wrap it up here. There's a lot of things I want to ask you, but I think we can do another podcast in a little while now, yeah. Part two. But tell us where people can reach you. Tell people where they can find your movies. Tell people when Astrogenic 2.2 is ready to come out, what that's about. Let's just wrap up with a little bit of where they can find you and what's to come from Ben Stewart.
Cool. Yeah. So the website is benjosephstewart.com, and Stewart is S-T-E-W-A-R-T. You go there, you can find Esoteric Agenda 2. It's free on the homepage. You can also, anyone who wishes to support, there are DVDs or digital downloads you can get there. I also have other products for awakening the body and the gut microbiome there. But for the most part, there's a lot of really rich information there. The rest of my films, they're on Gaia.com, G-A-I-A. I have a Patreon page. I have a Brighteon and BitChute. So, because they took Esoteric Agenda 2 off of YouTube.
Oh, really?
Yeah, within 10 days. And the thing is I made it super easy for them. I loaded it with terms that, and their sensors probably exploding. So check out the films. I would say for the audience, check out Esoteric Agenda 2 and then work your way back and go retrograde motion and see where this evolution has been coming from and really how, when I'm talking about the art revolution that is happening and must happen more, how that started going back through the films. And you'll understand that, I mean, really everything that I'm doing is, it's but a drop in the bucket. And there are people waking up right now that want to connect with other people waking up right now. And the tribe is more visible than ever before. So, you know, if any of what we're saying today resonates with anybody, come to my website, but also get more involved in any way that you can, as long as it is rooted in inspiration and something where harmony, you know, rather than divisiveness is its root, you know, the prime mover of whatever you're feeling. So definitely go check out the films. They're all free online. You can check out all that stuff online. I have even more on Gaia.com, and my show Limitless is probably my pinnacle thing because it's all about human potential and how this is a higher quantum technology than anything we've ever built. And once you come into better understanding of that, then everything that we're saying today becomes abundantly clear. We have our hands on the dial. We get to choose. So benjosephstewart.com, and please send me your emails, send me your comments and your thoughts.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys, for tuning in. Please check this guy's work out. It's all amazing stuff. Helped me a lot. I think you'll really enjoy it. And thanks for everyone for all your support, like, subscribe, shares. I really, really appreciate that. Brother, thank you so much. This has been an amazing conversation. I look forward to part two of this. A lot more questions I want to dive into around psychedelics, around some of the other things you talked about in the film. So we'll dive into that when the time is right. Until then, brother, keep doing what you're doing, man. Love you. Thank you. And yeah, we'll chat again soon.
Much love, my man.